EV. His mother, Lenore, would say, without a blemish of pride, didn't do too badly at all. On the surface, such a statement revealed the dignity of the understatement so carefully concealed within the Barbados vernacular. But deep beneath is revealed an unshakable aspect of popular philosophy, the unanimous indigenous rejection of hubris and an insistence upon the celebration of humility and gentility in the presence of greatness. And so here this morning, we are gathered to celebrate and salute that special gift of grace, gentility, and greatness. A consciousness so precise and profound as to be near extinction in this competitive culture of global humanity. In the life and times of Sir Everton, we were called to bear witness to the effect of this phenomenon in our midst. The volcanic eruption in Westbury Village of a man, little in physical form and less so in monetary value, rising to become the greatest giant in a global world filled with giants, completing the near impossible climb to the top. It is my honor to recognize our beloved Governor General, Her Excellency Dame Sandra Mason, and our beloved Prime Minister, the Honorable Mayor Motley, members of the Weeks family, and I especially recognize Everton's children, Andre, Sharon, Christopher, Ariel, Maureen, and David. I salute our two immortals of West Indies and global cricket, the Right Excellent Sir Gary Sobers and Sir Wes Hall, legends of West Indies cricket, distinguished members of Parliament, the judiciary and the clergy and civil society, my distinguished colleague and principal of the KFL campus, Professor Eudine Barreto, the most honorable, president and officials of West Indies cricket, President Riley and other officials of the Barbados Cricket Association and the Barbados Cricket League, members of the West Indies and international cricket community, Mr. Adrian Donovan and all of the organizing friends of Sir Everton who we celebrate this day. What are the beginnings of this giant around whose feet we are met? Barbados was chosen 400 years ago by the English as the site of the world's first black slave society and economy. Into it, some 600,000 Africans were imported. Sir Everton was a descendant of the mere 83,000 who survived, less than 20%, and who made it through to emancipation. This demography of human destruction provides the background and the context of his roots, a life best understood as a study in courage, confidence, commitment, and consciousness. His ancestors were not brought to this island to be critical thinkers. They were not brought here to be artistic and creative. They were not brought here to pursue freedom and greatness. They were not brought here to be disruptive innovators or leaders, or to be the exemplars of excellence. Indeed, they were not expected to escape the estates and conquer the world far beyond. Sir Everton, then, was one of the greatest revolutionaries of our Caribbean world because he deliberately designed a method to turn this history upon its head. He was a disturber of the colonial peace that denied any justice. He emerged as a dignified man, representing everything he was not meant to be. If ever a bat became a bridge, if ever a bat became a beacon, if ever a bat became a baton, it was the bat in the hands of Everton de Courcy Weeks. We know of the performance statistics that define his cricket, the proof that constitutes his phenomenal prophetic achievements. They are etched in the architecture that holds and preserves many resilient records, standing in bold defiance of the corrosion of time. Evidence of a West Indian monument forged in the fire of an audacious mind. We know of the evidence. The 10 years of Weeks, 1948 to 1958. We know of the 4,455 test runs at an average of 58.61. Of his centuries, the first five of which were consecutive, with the highest being 207. We know of his 49 catches in his 48 tests, though few of us know of his one test wicket. We know that twice, in 1950 and 1956, the pundits and the peer reviewers deem him the best batsman in the world. We know that with his brothers in batsmanship, Sir Frank Worrall and Sir Clyde Walcott, he participated in laying the cornerstone for the West Indies' rise to the top of the world test table, an achievement which took place under the captaincy of our immortal Gary Sobers between 1965 and 1967. Yes, we did become world champions for the first time under Sir Gary's leadership. He was the one who defeated everyone back to back. But we also know that such abundant data represent but a distillation of the full truth that defined Sir Everton's destination, the 1,000 steps in the journey of a foot soldier, Lance Corporal Weeks of the Barbados Defense Force. Making his first class debut at the age of 19 and his test debut at 22 in 1948, and making his first test century number one of five in a row in his fourth match, making history in India that has refused to be erased, rewritten, or forgotten. After India, he continued in England. That streak of ruthless run manufacturing. It was the historic tour of 1950. Cricket, lovely cricket. London Bridge has fallen down, and the end of empire, and so on. But it wasn't done until the little giant of giants had made 7 centuries, including 5 doubles and a triple. 2 years later, 1952 to 53, he took to celebrating the Indians once again with an average of 102.28 against the allegedly unplayable spin. And again, 2 years later, 1955 to 56, he took a liking to New Zealand, where he mass-produced 3 consecutive test centuries and ended the tour with an average of 83.60. But numbers are never enough. Behind the figures reside a configuration of life and living. It is the grand narrative of which they are merely a part. Behind the numbers, there is the hidden history. With Sir Everton, the truth of this history is even more palpable. Once I recall why interviewing him, why on the heavens, I asked him, did you deliver those superhuman back-to-back hundreds not once, but twice? His reply was gentle. And I quote, back in those colonial days, performance on the field and selection didn't always go hand in hand. A poor boy like me, who couldn't vote when I was selected to play for my country, had to shame the selectors. You had to make so much runs that the selector would lose sleep if he didn't pick you. In the 1950-51 period, when adult suffrage was finally won in our country, the global cricket fraternity expressed its peer appreciation of Sir Everton and designated him the best batsman in the world. In this recognition and elevation, he became the first Barbadian to be classified and celebrated as number one in the world in any approved and respected endeavor. This was a seismic, seminal moment. Barbados, not yet a nation state, and under colonial oppression, had received its first international endorsement as a place that produced performance excellence. The island entered the annals of international popular culture as a society that gave life and nurture to a native recognized as a special gift to humanity. The wisdom shown by Wisden after the war was finally beginning to unshackle the island's inhabitants from the old plantation scaffold. But Weeks was more than a wise choice. He was the metaphor that defined the mentality necessary for the making of a nation. He placed his country and region above the cruelty of history. He became a champion of the achievement and liberation of our people with dignity. The masses that followed Marcus Garvey and to reject in colonialism in preference of democracy had produced an icon that represented their dreams for future generations. In the inner city of Bridgetown, this recognition knew no boundary. In the four corners of the planet Earth, Everton was hailed a hero, an artist, a humanist, and the existential expression of goodness that resides as the key element in what is constituted as greatness. He took the captaincy of his country before the nation was created and faced the ferocious resentment from an element born with the entitlement of empire. Ironically, his beloved cricket club, the greatest incubator of cricketing talent the world has known, also carried the name Empire. His rise to leadership of club and country was a victory from the historically vanquished communities that were pushing for the ending of empire and the opening of all doors to the richness of the poor. The transformation driven by his genius were expressed as confidence, courage, commitment, and consciousness, the qualities required to erupt the new nation from the rubble of the colonial empire. It was simultaneously the beginning of the regional recognition that the power of merit would transcend the hegemonic machinations of money. Sir Everton was the symbol of these truths that made the Caribbean nation possible and sustainable. He was the harbinger, the one who announced the coming of the flood of greatness in the next generation that found expression in the priceless personhoods of Sir Gary and Sir Wes. These men became bearers of God's truth that a people can be enchained, a people can be disenfranchised, a people can be tortured and tormented, but their intellect and eternal inner sovereignty can never be driven from the fertility of their souls. And now in Barbados, everywhere in this Caribbean, especially in the Eastern Caribbean, where Sir Everton coached and scouted for talent, finally opening the door that produced the giants like the Antiguan Knights, Sir Viv, Sir Andy, Sir Kirtley, and Sir Richie. He was a little man whose great spirit could not be broken. Here was a majestic man who withstood the pressures of the parochial and claimed the victory of the global. Here was a human with the generosity of a gentleman who knew that he was sent with a message which said, "Behind me, there are many others. I am here to pave the way." The presence of humility in every aspect of his living and legacy tells a narrative that invokes the images of humanity at its finest, from subtle wit to the firm grip on the hand of principles never to be breached and always to be met with a straight bat. On and off the field, his display of dapper deportment spoke to a mind made up that elegance and eloquence should define the art of living. There is no greater gift a man can give his society than that of the highest standards. In this regard, Sir Everton was eternal in his giving. Our communities from Kingston to Georgetown were enlarged by his giving and seemed more sophisticated with his presence. Cricket was his craft, but art defined his contribution. The demonstration of gentleness and greatness at the intersection of vision and victory was the evidence of his art, not as a performance, but as a way of life, an existential being. His manner remained a mystery to many who observe his moments and his movements. His humor is legendary, his wit as sharp as a stepping razor. He loved attending cricket matches at the 3W's Oval Caulfield campus, where he served as patron. We had the pleasure of borrowing him from Empire, and we said to him, as patron of the 3W's Oval, we are celebrating the legacy of Empire. This is Empire Part 2. It is a memorial dedicated to the hurricane that blew away the colonial debris. In typical humor, he would invariably admonish me for allowing rowdy spectators to occupy and misbehave on the spot on the mound we had chosen as his resting place. He took a very keen interest in any activity that took place on his spot. He would describe it as sacred ground, not to be desecrated. And he would say to me, be careful, because I don't want all kinds of people sitting around on my spot. Make sure you choose them carefully. He was my friend, whom I fail to fathom, even though he exposed himself to me as his biographer. He possessed too complicated a consciousness, honed by a history and a domesticity that produced elegance in form and excellence in performance. He gave more than anyone could imagine. It came from within a very complex and impenetrable interior. Only the discipline of a sage could have produced results such as his upon a public stage. And now, with his departure to a higher pavilion, we recognize as we celebrate the essential truth that a prophet had passed our way to show us the path. Condolences I extend to all members of the Weeks family, to our country, and to each and every citizen of the Caribbean. May his soul rest in peace.